Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Kia ora, g'day, and welcome to the history of Aotearoa, New Zealand. Episode 127, Q&A 2023, Part 5. This podcast is recorded in Te Whanganui Atara on the rohe of Mui Upoko, Taranaki Whānui, Te Ati Awa and Ngāti Toa Rangatira. We are generously supported by our amazing patrons. If you want to support Hans, go to patreon.com/historyaotearoa. On to the next questions, which are from KP, who is on the Discord. Thank you very much for these questions, KP. When can we crowdsource for a new simple tank? This was something that I jokingly talked about in the last Q&A, which was, we should do one of the cool things that I'd like to do is crowdsource to build a new simple tank. That'd be awesome. But the fact of the matter is, to really be a Debbie Downer and give you a serious answer, I don't have enough time to do something like that. Realistically, I don't have the time, nor do I have the expertise. So I'd have to team up with someone else. I'd love to do it. I think it would be awesome to do something like that and document it, make a documentary about it or something, about the trials and tribulations of trying to do this thing and how it would work and making it historically accurate. I think it'd be really interesting. I think it'd be really cool, but there's just too many gaps in the time that I have, the expertise, the funding, obviously. Well, I guess that's what the crowdsourcing is for, but you know, there is a lot of gaps there that would need to be filled, and the real answer is I'd have to have a lot of time on my hands to do that, and between doing this podcast and working a full-time job, I don't think it would be realistic unless I got a bunch of people to help me, and that in and of itself is quite an effort as well. So it'd be cool, I'd love it, it'd be awesome, but I don't, unless something drastically changes in my situation, then I don't think it is something that is going to happen. But you never know. If you know any rich people that could pay me money to quit my job to do this thing, tell them to give me a call. KP's second question was one of those ones that I was hoping for. Can you please talk about your tech setup? Absolutely I can. As I mentioned earlier, I have recently upgraded my tech setup, which is really good. So hopefully it sounds a lot better than it has previously. So I guess I'll run you through kind of a little bit of a history of my tech setup, because it has changed a reasonable amount over the years. So originally, way back in the beginning, I was using a Blue Snowball, which was fine. It was affordable whilst also being not absolutely terrible, which was good enough at the time. And then eventually I upgraded to some ATR2100 USB microphones. And they were also fine, but a bit more upmarket, which was good. You know, it was meant to be a bit of an improvement. And then in 2021, I changed to some Rode USB microphones. And that's because I won the bronze
Award for Best Indie Podcast in the New Zealand Podcast Awards. And that category was sponsored by Acast, and they offered some prizes if you got bronze, silver, or gold. So that microphone was my prize for getting bronze. And in fact, I got four of those microphones, which I obviously didn't need. So I gave the other three away to other podcasters in New Zealand because I, you know, wanted to share the love around a bit, and I didn't. It felt a bit wrong to just sell them, so I thought I'd give them away to people that would have use for them. Waffles was actually one of them, which was great. So yeah, so that's what I have been using for the last couple of years, and initially I think it was okay, but when I got them I was recording in a very different space than what I am now and what I have been in the last sort of year or so. I think initially it was probably fine, but as I've moved, moved house in the last couple of years, I don't think those have been very good in the spaces I've been using them in. And so I have been really wanting to change that up for quite some time. So what I have ended up doing now is those ATR 2100s that I did use previously as my second set of microphones. I actually bought, I bought two of them at the time because I was going to use one of them as my standard microphone. And when I wanted to go somewhere to interview someone, you know, say for example the Biscuit Tin interview where I actually went to Parliament and I talked to the Clerk of the House in his office, I was going to use those two microphones along with a Zoom H4N to record those interviews on location, if you will. So that was the idea, is that the Zoom is like a little kind of audio recording device. You know, you basically plug the microphones in, you push record, you talk into it, you push stop, and it does like a bunch of other things as well. But it's kind of like a portable microphone and recorder. It's got its own microphone on it, but it's not super good for what I want to do. So I plugged in the ATRs into it to be able to record. It obviously doesn't have super great audio, because of course you never, when you're on location, you never really quite know what kind of space you're going to be in. But obviously that's not really the point. The idea is that if you have someone that you want to interview and they are more comfortable, you know, being in their own space, and you can come to them and talk to them so they can sit in their chair or at their table or whatever. If they're more comfortable with that, I wanted to be able to have the freedom to be able to go and see them in person. Of course, it's pretty common now to do conversations over Zoom and that sort of stuff. But I bought these microphones and the Zoom, I believe, before the pandemic started. So although that was a viable option, was to use Zoom or Skype or whatever, I kind of envisioned that lots of people would probably prefer me go talk to them in person. And then the pandemic happened, and then a lot of that kind of stuff changed. The interview with the head of the repatriation team at Te Papa was originally going to be in person, but that was going to happen right around the time lockdown happened. And so that's partially why it was meant to happen like a few months earlier than it actually did, but because of a couple of other things plus the pandemic, it ended up being a little bit later. And so of course the pandemic made it more common that people were a bit more comfortable doing interviews and things over Zoom. So I haven't actually used that quite as much as I originally thought. But anyway, so that's my like travel kit. But the crux of that story is that I kept the ATRs. So I had these microphones, and I recently bought a Focusrite Scarlett audio interface, which is basically a fancy box that has like a gain dial and does a bunch of stuff. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a fancy box that does magic that makes my voice sound better. I don't really know how it works. That's what professionals have, so I thought I'd get one. And the Focusrite Scarlett is, again, one of those things that is affordable and is fine. I could absolutely get something that's a lot better than this, the small red box that I have on my desk. But they're like thousands of dollars, right? The Focusrite, for example, was only hundreds. It wasn't more than $1,000. And yeah, so I could find something that's probably a lot better, but it's a lot more expensive and honestly probably a bit overkill for what I need, having discussed various options with other podcasters as well. So it's nice and affordable and does a decent enough job of what I want, basically, which is great. I think the audio sounds better with the Scarlett. I hope that comes across. Maybe it doesn't, but oh well. It's nice for me because these ATRs, although I said that they were USB microphones, and that's why kind of that's kind of the big problem with the audio previously, is it's always been USB microphones. And generally, if you want good audio, you need XLR microphones. And thankfully, the ATRs have holes or ports for both USB and XLR. The XLR cables are what I was using on the Zoom, the travel kit. So now I've got the XLR cable plugged in to the Scarlett, which, yeah, is meant to be better. I don't know why, but it's meant to be better. That's what people say, so that's what I have done. So, yeah, and then I use a pair of... what are they? DT770 Pros as my headphones. I bought those recently as well. They're really good. They're just, you know, when you think of like professional like recording headphones of like the things that people on the radio use, usually you're thinking of these. If you saw a picture of them, you probably recognize them. So I bought a pair of fancy headphones because I wanted them to just be good and last. And I use them, you know, on my computer when I'm playing games and stuff. So I use headphones a lot anyway. So I wanted a good pair. And those plug into the Scarlett as well, which I didn't realize I needed a fancy plug thing, because it's not just a 3.4mm audio jack, it's like a big one. But thankfully, my headphones came with the attachment to be able to put them in. So actually, it was really lucky that I bought these kind of roughly at the same time as well. So that was really good as well. Happy with that. So that's the physical tech setup. ATR 2100 microphones with XLR cables into a Focusrite Scarlett, and then pumped audially through some DT770 Pros that I used to listen to my own voice. And that was also something that was really important about the Scarlett as well, is that up until this point, I haven't been able to listen to my own voice when I record. So I have to have one of the headphones like off my ears so that I can hear my own voice. Partially because I can get quite loud if I can't hear myself. So it annoys the other people living in my house. But also just because, you know, if you're trying to pronounce words and things, even just simple English words, you'd be surprised how difficult it is sometimes to say just simple words. But if you can't quite hear yourself properly, it's harder to try and figure out those words and how to say them properly and whether it's coming through on the audio and stuff. So just it's just a bit easier if you can hear yourself. So that's a really big advantage that I've been really enjoying as well, is just being able to hear myself. So that's the physical tech setup. In terms of the equipment that I use to record, or the software that I use to record, it is Audacity. Again, because it straddles that line of being affordable, it's free, so that's great, and it more or less does everything that I need it to do. I've previously, or before I started the podcast, I had a little bit of experience with Audacity. That I did a little bit of random stuff in university. Nothing terribly extreme. It was like listening to whale recordings and stuff. So I had a little bit of experience in Audacity, so that when I loaded it up for the first time, I sort of knew like where some of the stuff was and how to like select things and move things around. So I had like a extremely basic understanding of how Audacity worked. So the combination of previous experience and it being free is the reason why I started using Audacity. And I know I could use other ones, and I know I could pay for them, and they're probably better. But the problem is, of course, I'd have to relearn how to use them again, and that's just not really something that I want to do, if I'm being entirely honest. So yeah, so I use Audacity. I know I could be better. I know I could use something else. I just don't. is the real answer there. So that's my recording setup. So thank you, KP, for that question. All right, on to the next question, which comes from Gustav. I was wondering why you refer to Hans as we in the outro when the podcast is just you. Thank you for the question, Gustav. This is a question that I'm kind of surprised I haven't been asked earlier. You're the first person who has at least asked me about it. I don't know if anyone else has noticed that I do this, but certainly no one else has asked me about it. Yeah, it is something that I do. When I refer to the podcast, I refer to it as we. You know, like there's more people working on this than there actually is. And there has been some editors in the past who work on the podcast. So to say that there's been multiple people working on it is not entirely untrue at certain points of the podcast. So sometimes there has been two people, but by and large, you are correct. It is just me. And I've been saying, you know, we and us a lot, even before I had anyone else working actively on the podcast besides myself. So to answer your question, why do I do that? The main reason is that I kind of thought, and kind of still do, think of the podcast as a collective effort of not just myself, but there's the listeners, the authors who write the books that I use as sources, there's the people that I interview, there's the patrons who give me money, and of course, we're talking about people in the podcast who are real. The historical characters we talk about are very real people that are no longer around. So they're part of it as well, even if they have no influence on it in any way. But there are people that the people we talk about are very real. They had real lives. These aren't just stories that I'm making up. They're actual human beings. And so I kind of wanted to acknowledge all of those people who you don't typically think of when you think about who is making the podcast. Sure, I'm the only one who's actively running the whole thing, but there are all these other people, living and dead, that contribute in their own little, sometimes invisible, ways. It's the shitposters on Twitter who keep me sane, my partner who I talk about ideas with, my employer who gives me money, the historians who tell me that this project is worthwhile, the professional radio podcasters who say they're impressed with my work, the other indie podcasters who help with collabs, ideas, and just building a community that's fun to be in, and very open to assistance and collaboration. And again, the authors who write the books, the tech forums who help me solve issues, the patrons who give me extra money just for the podcast, the characters we talk about who aren't characters but real people, and listeners for suffering through ads, which helps give me even more funding. There are a lot of people involved in the podcast in tiny little ways that all contribute to making the final product. So it's a way to acknowledge them, because even though I say they contribute in tiny ways, those tiny ways are extremely important. I wouldn't have been able to upgrade my tech setup without the patrons, so thank you so much to those patrons that allow me to do that. Those Spates episodes also wouldn't have occurred because I had to buy a $150 or something dollar book to be able to do those episodes. So, you know, there's lots of different people that have all these different influences on the podcast in these very small but very important ways. So don't take that to mean that I say your contribution's small. Every contribution counts, whether that's financial, moral support, or bouncing off ideas, or helping me with tech problems. There's all sorts of different things that contribute to the podcast in ways that you wouldn't even think of. And I guess to kind of go back to some of that stuff I talked about earlier with, you know, it's sometimes a lonely job if you're doing it on your own. And so just the simple act of sending a podcaster an email and saying, hey, I really like this. This is a thing that I learned that I didn't know before. I thought that was pretty cool or interesting. Or doing a review where you say something like that as well. Letting podcasters know that you listened and that you enjoyed it is very, very significant and helpful. Even though for you it might not seem like a very big thing, for us it is a very big thing to know that this has been worthwhile. So, you know, I guess this is my roundabout way of saying, yeah, give podcasters reviews and send them emails and tell them nice things. But, you know, there's lots of different ways that people contribute, big and small, and all of them are important and significant. So by saying we and us when I refer to the podcast, that is my way of acknowledging, or one of the ways that I acknowledge those people. And maybe that's a bit weird. I don't know. Yeah, maybe that's a bit strange. But that's my logic and reasoning behind why I do that. On to the next question, which comes from Sophie. If you could actually witness any historical event that occurred in New Zealand or even worldwide, what would it be and would you get involved? Now, I thought about this question and much like Waffles, one of Waffles' questions, I feel that there's an obvious answer here, which is the signing of Te Tiriti o Waitangi, the Treaty of Waitangi, what is described as the founding document of the modern nation of New Zealand. And that's significant, and that would be interesting, but I don't know if that's what I'd pick. I don't know if that's the one that I think would be the most interesting for me. I suppose it would be interesting to see all the interpersonal dynamics play out, you know, as the treaty is being signed or the negotiation that preceded it. But I'm not sure if that would actually be terribly interesting to watch. I'm kind of unsure, but I don't know if that's the one that I would find the most interesting. You know, if you're picking any event that happened in New Zealand or even worldwide, I don't know if that's the most interesting thing that has happened that would be cool to see. The thing that I've been doing recently is I've been reading about Abel Tasman, because that's who we're going to cover next year. He's the next step in our story, because he's the first European to find New Zealand. And the part of that story that has been particularly fascinating for me is the first interaction Tasman and his crew have with Māori, which is in fact the first interaction of Māori with any Europeans. And it goes south pretty quickly, for a number of different reasons. It's not a terribly positive interaction. But there is an interesting dynamic there where we don't know much about what the Māori side were thinking or discussing. A lot of that side of the history has been lost because the group of people, the hapū that was living in the area at the time, were later conquered by a different Māori group. And then they were conquered subsequently later on as well. So that the stories of that experience, if those stories even survived, didn't survive those two subsequent conflicts. So I think if, you know, I had a time machine and I could go back and I could go and see this event and the lead up to, you know, Abel Tasman turning up in Mohua, Golden Bay, which is near Nelson, which is where this interaction took place. You know, if I could stand on the beach in the pa and talk to those people, I think it would be really interesting to be able to ask them as it is happening what their thoughts were. Who did they think these newcomers were? What did they make of the white cloths that they were waving over the sides of the ships? Because what Abel Tasman did is he had his crew wave around like the white linen that they had, because they were going to use it as trade goods. The idea was that they had been given all this stuff to use to trade with people that they came across, and a bunch of this linen was what they had, was one of the things that they had been given. So Tasman, when the waka came up to their ships, instructed his crew to wave around the cloths to indicate, we have things for you, we have things that we can trade, you know. So I think there's a whole dynamic there where the language barrier is obviously like the crucial part here, is why this whole interaction went the way it did. And so yeah, the sources have a lot of speculation about what was going on the Māori side, because we know quite a lot about the discussions that were going on the Dutch side, because Tasman, you know, wrote in his diary like what they were discussing and what they were going to do and how those plans played out and all that sort of stuff. But we don't know what Māori were doing on their end. We don't know, because obviously they were coming together and discussing, you know, what's going on, how they were going to approach the situation. And we don't have any of that. So it would be so interesting to know, what were they discussing? What were the options being put forward, and how did people react to that? Surely there was options, and this is something that we're going to talk about in these episodes anyway, but surely there was options being put forward of, like, we should just attack them, or we should try and negotiate, or we should send someone to the nearby allies to bring reinforcements to help us. And yeah, you know, there'll be all these different things. There's some thoughts that maybe the Māori thought that the ships were, and the people on board those ships, were like ghosts or some sort of supernatural entity. And there's other thoughts that they would have known that they were people from somewhere across the sea, because, you know, they knew that they came from somewhere else. They had stories that they'd come from Hawaiki. So they knew that there were other people beyond the areas that they lived. So there's that as well. And there's all sorts of other different things of what they may or may not have thought, and how they were potentially going to approach the situation. And I found in the sources that sometimes these authors will say, oh, well, these Māori were discussing this and this is what they were going to do. And it's like, we actually don't know what they discussed, and we don't know what course of action they decided to take, because we only know how the situation played out. We know what happened, but we don't know, was that their plan to go to attack them? Because that's a kind of eventually what happened, is the Māori did end up attacking some of the Dutch and ended up killing a few of them. And so, you know, was that their original plan? Was that just one chief who got a bit gung-ho and was just like, right, I'm just going to go do it, even though the plan was originally to just, let's just scope it out, you know? Maybe that was the plan. That's all stuff we'll discuss anyway. But I think that would be really interesting to be able to talk to those people and know what was going on, because some authors also compare it to aliens landing on Earth. And although that's an accurate description, did Māori actually view it that way? Again, there is a possibility that the Māori understood and knew that these people were probably from somewhere else, from beyond the sea. Probably didn't quite realize how far away they were originally from, but they potentially had a good grasp of the fact that these people did not, you know, were not local, and that they had come from somewhere beyond the sea. So it may not have been aliens turn up and they're like, oh my God, what do we do? They're like, oh, these are other people. They're just pale, you know, and they just come in big ships that we don't recognize. But again, we don't know that. We don't know if that's how they viewed it. Maybe they did view it as aliens. Maybe they, like, in an alien sort of way, maybe they thought that these people were ghosts or some other sort of supernatural creature. Because I believe that's where the term Pākehā comes from. It comes from, it's derived from the word for, like, a sea elf kind of thing. So yeah, so I think that would be really interesting. The other, because I get, I've, you know, like with all of these, I've got two options. The other option that I thought would be really interesting would be seeing when Māori first arrived to Aotearoa. So, like, watch from the beach as the waka get closer to the shore and they pull up on the sand and the people jump off onto the whenua for the first time. Because I think that's really quite a significant thing that happened, right? You know, they're the first humans that Aotearoa has ever seen. And that, you know, Aotearoa was the last major landmass to be colonized by humans. And I think there is something kind of, I don't know, romantic, poetic about that, about humans never being here before and those humans being the first ones here and this being kind of the last major bastion that humanity hasn't been to and hasn't altered their environment in any way up until that point. I think that's a poetic kind of notion to see that happen. A vast untouched wilderness of infinite possibilities for these people who'd been traveling for possibly months because they were escaping disease, famine, or war. You know, these people have come from extremely bad circumstances. That's part of the reason, potentially part of the reason why they left and came to this new land. And so it's, you know, they make this dangerous and risky journey to a land that they, you know, maybe don't quite know very much about. It's very unexplored. They don't know what's out there. They had virtually no idea that awaited, you know, what awaited them. They didn't know what predators might be out there, whether what could be eaten and what couldn't. You know, there's a lot of unknowns there to go from something that is already a horrible situation of, again, disease, famine, and war, to come all the way here for crossing your fingers that it's going to be fine. It's not quite like that, obviously. They had a bit of information, and obviously they were very good at oceanic navigation and that sort of thing. But that's a big journey to undertake with limited knowledge. And so I think that would be really interesting to watch is these people first arrive in New Zealand or in Aotearoa and, begin a new life for themselves. If you want to get in touch, my email and social media are on historyaotearoa.com. Aotearoa spelt Aotearoa. You can also find helpful resources there, like transcripts and sources. If you would like to support Hans, you can do so through donating via Patreon or giving us a review. As always, haere tu matu, hoki tu mai. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.